It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Oh, do we have a good show for you. All the way from Switzerland, Jeff Jarvis joins us from the World Economic Forum. Also here, Matt Cutts of Google search fame and Kevin Marks. It's going to be a great one. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 336, recorded Wednesday, January 20th, 2016, Penguin Awareness Day. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/twig. And by Squarespace. Make your business and online store stand out with the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a beautiful way. Enter the offer code TWIG and get 10% off Squarespace. You should. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest from Google and the cloud and Facebook and Twitter and all of that. And we got a great, this is the classic panel right here. Starting with Jeff Jarvis, who's in Davos for the World Economic Forum, and he's half out. Are you in the clubhouse there at Davos?
No, I'm in the media center.
Is Warren Buffett just going to peer over your shoulder at some moment? No. Bono going to kind of say?
Or journalists, but there's free drinks. I'm having a little hot chocolate from the machine.
Nice. All right. And there's a janitor, and that's it.
That's it. Everybody else is off at parties. Not me. Not me, because I'm dedicated. Huge party.
Thank you.
I'm not there. I'm sitting here on a silly podcast.
We'll make a deal. We should make a deal. Like, when can Jeff go to the party? Like, the first time somebody says,
"Amp," you should go over the street.
Oh.
That's easy, because I'll say it in 2 minutes.
Matt Cutts is here. Yeah. Hey, Matt Cutts.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
MattCutts.com/blog. He is unaffiliated.
Matt, is this your tribute to what's his name? The guy who did the bear show and died?
Dan Haggerty?
Dan Haggerty. This is your Dan Haggerty.
He's
tribute?
Got his Grizzly Adams beard on. He does.
It's just laziness. That's all.
But it comes and goes. You know why
my beard is longer?
Why?
Because I pride myself so much on packing, I decided to grow it so I wouldn't have to bring the beard trimmer.
Wow.
The little flow beady, because that would add 2 ounces.
Wow.
So that's how serious I am.
And also here, as if we didn't have an embarrassment of riches, Kevin Marks is here too. Hi, yeah. Kevin.
Hi there.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
This is a perfect cast to talk about anything they want to talk about. I mean, I will sit and listen in rapture, enrapt. I don't even want to
talk about AMP.
Or we could talk about AMP. Because, you know, there's been a little tweet back and forth going on. In fact, yeah. I think these two have been involved a little bit in it, as I have been with Jonathan Abrams.
Matt, all of us.
And Matt, too.
Yeah.
Oh, you weighed in as well. Okay, well, then we better start with this. So Jonathan Abrams is the founder of Nuzzle, which we all agree is fantastic, spectacular. Nuzzle is a website originally, now an app. It's on iOS. I think it's on Android too, yeah? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's a news app. It uses social signals from Facebook and Twitter to give you news you can get into. I don't want to say news you can use. That's probably trademarked. And one of the things, when AMP was announced at Google, one of the things that Nuzzle was very early on about, and Jonathan's a little cagey about how they are interfacing with this, but I gathered from his caginess that perhaps they had a early relationship with Google, that when you click on an article that has been AMPed, you'll get the AMP page. Now, I'm on a desktop, so I won't get that. Is that right? You have to be on mobile. Do we know? No one knows. Anybody?
No, I mean, if you go to the AMP page, it'll work on desktop as well, because it's just web stuff.
But what the question is, will Nuzzle send me to, because every AMP page, normally every AMP page has a standard web page associated with it, right?
Yeah, Nuzzle will send you to the AMP page if it exists.
No matter what.
I think so.
Is Medium amped?
No.
I refer you to our conversation from a few weeks back with Richard Gingras, head of news at Google. He was talking about AMP, and actually it's timely because AMP is about to go public.
Yeah, the end of February.
Wow, they're going to IPO already?
Not that kind of public. But it's been in beta up to this point, right? And limited in as to who can use it or no?
No, limited. It's an open standard, so anybody can put it up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
But it hasn't been integrated into anything at Google except that test page.
And by the way, that's, to me, in some ways, a little bit of the controversy about AMP is that Google says we're going to favor AMP sites.
Well, favor might be
no,
a little
strong. No.
Let Matt address this. Let Matt address this because he knows something about Google and search.
Well, yeah, a smidge.
Just a smidge.
So typically, you care about the quality. So if a higher quality site is a better answer or result, then you want to return that. But
speed will certainly be part of that quality, right?
It's more of a smaller ingredient compared to, you know, things like the PageRank or how well we think it answers the user's question. But if it's a relatively small difference between two pages, then if one is much faster, then you can imagine that would help with the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be like your page is faster, so you outrank everybody else, even though there are better resources. It's definitely, you know, you look for the best pages, and then you do take speed into account, but it's not going to be like, three times more valuable as a signal than some other quality signal, for example.
So the stated purpose of AMP is to provide a subset of the full web stack and to create pages that load faster and for users, right? Is that kind of in summary succinct enough?
Mm-hmm.
It does this by doing a number of things, including caching pages on Google and other servers, although to date it's Google-only servers. And it also has a subset of JavaScript that's allowed. I'm looking through my Twitter because I'm trying to find this conversation we had. Jonathan Abrams was saying how much he likes
So he's integrated it into what do you call it? Into Nuzzle, right?
Nuzzle,
you've seen this. So
as I would if I were Jonathan Abrams.
So if I click on something that is AMP enabled, like this NY Times one, you see a little flash like that, lightning bolt, and then it loads the page directly. So that loads very quickly.
Whereas, let me look at that on desktop. I'm going to do the same thing. It did not do that on desktop.
Enabled.
It did not do that on desktop. So let me do that. Let me do that again. This is from Nuzzle, clicking a New York Times article. And while it did load fast because it cached it, it is not an amped version of New York Times.
Yeah.
And you could tell just by looking at it because this bit's probably unapproved JavaScript and so forth.
Right.
That's a big
Whereas
story.
If I click the NYMAG one, it takes longer. It's noticeably slower. So I click that one. Well, it's not terrible, but it still takes a little while to load.
Also, subtext maybe in the foreground, a response to the ad blocker boycott, and I'm going to call it a boycott, people using ad blocker to boycott advertising on the web, and a response to kind of out-of-control ad tech. There are ads in AMP. In fact, one of the news stories of this week is that companies like kind of surprised me. Outbrain and Taboola will be part of the AMP project. Taboola. These are two advertising tech companies I would prefer did not be part of the AMP project.
Outbrain.
Outbrain is the and Taboola too are the ones that add. You like this story? You're going to love this story about belly fat to the bottom of many websites.
But the
Matt's
nice thing
laughing
is that-
at this.
Well, one nice thing is AMP says, okay, you know what the ad size in it is in advance, and so you don't have the page stuttering up and down as you're trying to load it. You know, as you're about to click on something, suddenly the link changes and now it's an ad or something like that. And there's also formats that are faster and sort of standardized, and so you're not going to have this pop-up that sort of floats around on the page and blocks everything. So it's intended to make the web faster, but I think the nice thing is users will like it as well because they can sort of understand understand, okay, this is something that that I can tell is the article. This is something that is definitely an ad, and it's not the case that the ad has to be annoying. It can be reasonable and fast, and I think users will like that.
A fast out brain is no better.
No. Well, the point is that Outbrain is there's a pattern there, which is here's some other stuff you might like to read. And there was some discussion.
If you have no life, it'll release stupid.
It's mostly link based, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So there's this notion of story cards, which is here's a bunch of previews of other sites that you want to read. Could be standardized that, but that got a bit sidelined into a can we have a templating language, which is a shame. There was a bug that we wrote there.
Yeah. So in fact, you just pushed along the GitHub link, intent to implement AMP template.
Yeah, so basically the conversation started out being how do we do these story card like things at the bottom from someone at The Guardian.
Right.
And we went back and forth on, oh yeah, there's ways to do that. And I pitched microformats and IndieWeb because that's what I do, because actually we've solved this problem. And then they were like, oh, we need a templating language, blah, blah, blah. And then this became, we're going to implement a templating language. So I'm not quite sure how that actually helps in terms of standardizing the idea of story cards. Because the thing is, the story card idea is basically the same idea as content description format and RSS and all these things that we've had for nearly 20 years, which is how do I get a set of summaries from one site onto another site? You know, this is, in terms of solved problems, we have solved the problem. But everyone seems to want to do something more complicated each time we try and do it, which is kind of frustrating.
I can understand why somebody like Jonathan Ambers would love AMP, because it makes his app fast and respond better, and people are reading stuff in his Nuzzle, and I use Nuzzle. He said I kind of fundamentally misunderstood, or I can't remember if he was that broad. He said I misunderstood AMP or misrepresented it in some ways.
Well, but what we can cut to the chase is that I asked him to be on the show next week, and he said, sure.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about it then?
So we can get his point
of view.
So we can
start at the AMP.
Yeah.
So the other point is that the thing that I showed a minute ago inside Nuzzle was that he's implemented displaying AMP stuff in Nuzzle.
Right.
And the question I asked of Google, also in the project, which I think I dropped in there a couple of minutes ago, was, that's great, but is there a way to, we can all embed AMP things because they're HTML, so we can just embed them as an iframe, and that will work. And
because there's a link, there's a URL to an AMP page.
And an AMP page is just a web page with one particular JIT library and a bunch of other markup.
But is there a way to deduce an AMP page from a URL? Can you just add ampersand
AMP? Yeah, they've got a rel AMP. They've got a rel tag to find for which way, how to find the AMP page.
So you have to look into the page to see it, though.
Yeah.
You can't just...
But if you're a parser, you can do that.
Yeah.
If you're fetching it something anyway, you can do that. Yeah. So, no one baked this in a while ago, and your website has it, and my website has it, because no one helpfully did that for us. But the thing that Google hasn't said, this hasn't released code for, is how to do the thing that they did in the demo thing, which is where you have multiple AMP things and it preloads the next one and fetches it so you can swipe between them instantly, which is one of the most compelling parts of the demo. Whereas if you actually have to tear down an iframe and create an iframe and fetch everything each time you click, then there's still some overhead. And so the question I was asking in that issue was, can we have some sample code for doing that, please? Because that would be useful for those of us who want to embed things and other things. And they said that's not ready yet.
So what, and we'll talk with Jonathan.
Maybe that'll show up.
We'll talk with Jonathan next week. But my objection to AMP is essentially that it feels like it's forking the web. Matt, do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I do. And I appreciate that you have played devil's advocate with this, and the fact that you just launched your new site that is very JavaScript heavy, which is, sort of the opposite end of the spectrum from the I have one article and I want to put it up and here's two or three ads to do with it. There are a couple new things. One is just today Google added AMP error reporting to the Search Console. So for people who want to try to support AMP, you can get a lot more help with it now, and that's sort of automated and that's available to everybody. The other thing is, after I was on This Week in Google with Jeff side by side, I talked to a couple people on the web spam team who have actually worked on the validator for AMP pages. And I love that people in web spam do this consistently. One person, she worked on the birthday doodle. Another person worked on support for HTTPS. And from that conversation, from one of the people who worked on the validator, I feel much better about, you know, that Google's intent is trying to do the best it can to try to make sure that we support an open web. And I think Richard Gingras and everybody else realizes that if it's not something that's open and federated and supported by a ton of publishers and offers the options that they need. So, for example, there's another URL in the rundown about supporting subscriptions and paywalls and that sort of stuff. If you don't support the sort of things that publishers need and that users want, so it's a win on both sides, then it's not going to take off and people will just go to proprietary walled gardens. And so from what I've heard from talking to people inside Google, I actually feel pretty optimistic that this will be a pretty nice win in terms of instead of having 20 different analytics, you know, little beacons, you could just have one analytics include, and then that would be able to power the chart beats or the Google Analytics that you want to do. And I do think you'll end up with a better experience. Your point is well taken. You know, what if Google has veto power on what goes in the JavaScript to create the widgets? But from talking to the person that I talked to at Google, I do feel better about that. Like, they're going to try to support as much as they can and still try to be reasonable.
Good. And I don't want to spend a lot of time. It sounds like we'll be talking about this next week.
Yeah.
But you hadn't been able to weigh in all this time. You've been running along, listening to Twig, completely unable to shout at us. So
is there anything else on your mind you want to talk about?
No, there was. I was listening to Twig, and you said, Matt Cutts is probably running right now, and I was literally on the treadmill right then. And I was like, yes! And everybody in the gym's like, what's that guy doing?
Why is
doing?
He yelling?
Anyway, but good to be back.
It's wonderful to have you. Jeff, how's Davos? Is it started, the World Economic Forum?
Yeah. Well, busy day. I came from a reception. Sorry, they're vacuuming around me. I came from you should say that.
This is kind of poignant. I feel like it's an Edward Hopper painting, like Nighthawks at the Davos.
The man is working hard.
You need to get a release.
Like me. No, I didn't.
No, you don't need to get a release. This is a podcast. No one cares.
Switzerland. So Facebook has a big presence here this year. They built a whole two-story pavilion right by the bus stop by the Congress Center, which is a big deal. And they had a little reception for some media people today. I went to Sheryl Sandberg was there. And at it, they're showing off the fact that how wonderful they are to the net. And they have some of the material from the big winged drone there. It's amazingly light, the carbon fiber stuff. And they have a little display about how they're bringing internet to the world with internet.org. And so they're really here in presence. Google, they're here, but they're not being as visible by a long shot. So that's I thought interesting that they were hanging around.
Is the World Economic Forum as big a deal as it was, you know, back in the day when it was Bono hobnobbing with Bill Gates and
you know. Those are your standards for world politics, Leo.
That's the people who run the world. Let's face it.
We do have I think Bono's here and Leo DiCaprio's here.
Oh, wow, ooh. That's actually pretty good.
And
how
Kevin
about
Spacey?
Angela Merkel? Is she there?
No, she didn't show up this year.
Mm. Hmm. Other world leaders?
That's yeah. No, Biden is here making a mess of the traffic. Mm. Tomorrow I get to be in a session with the new head of Argentina and the new head of Canada. I'm very excited about seeing
this. Exciting.
I saw him today. He's boy, and I'm getting in trouble with your listeners, Leo, but don't blame him, blame me. The contrast between Trudeau and Trump across the border is just phenomenal.
Or Trudeau and Harper. I mean,
well, that too.
That will make the Canadians happy for the most part if we say that.
I know, but he was charming and amazing today. And
I don't know. I for one look forward to a Trump Palin ticket in 2016.
Oh, jeez.
I think that's exciting.
Did you see the Daily News front page?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm with stupid. And they're both pointing at each other.
It's kind of great.
I didn't realize the Daily News was such a leftist rag. It really has.
In the last 6 months or so, they have done brilliant page ones. Brilliant.
Well, just, Trump's given them a lot of fuel for for that. Yeah.
So tomorrow I see the folks, and I'm sure we talked about AMP.
How long before Univision buys the Daily News. That's my question.
That's a good question. Because Univision, you saw what they bought this
week. They bought The Onion.
Yeah, it's cool, I think.
Well, I loved NPR's headline. What was it? Area newspaper sold to Univision.
No kidding.
And no kidding. Yeah, they had to add that. Yeah.
That was great. Yeah, I think it's some people went after me on Twitter saying, what a stupid move. I think it's great. It's
new Univision because they're recognizing that their natural audience, which is Spanish-speaking Latinos in the U.S., is dwindling because the second generation are speaking English and they're not watching Univision. So, and if you want to reach those millennials, humor is the best way. And so it actually makes a lot of sense. They started Fusion that was with NBC Universal, right?
ABC, which is backing out. Yeah.
They're backing out of Fusion?
ABC is. Yeah, ABC
Interesting.
Is, yeah. Interesting. They have a couple of brilliant executives there. Isaac Lee is in charge of Univision Digital and Fusion. Borja Echeverria is in charge of digital news. And they're really bright and they're doing neat things. So, yeah, it's not a bad call, though I think they're probably too smart to want a newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah. Although they wouldn't mind going after Trump a little bit after he went after.
True.
The Miss Universe contest.
I was just going to say, if you're talking to Trudeau, he was helping to open up Google's Waterloo office. And something I didn't know, apparently he actually learned or knows how to code in C++.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
I think everybody under 40 knows C++. Isn't that the case?
That, and he's a skateboard instructor.
Hey, some of us have a 40. Easy.
Really, so Trudeau is a coder?
Yeah, not only am I a former teacher, but I also, when I was studying engineering, got halfway decent as a coder in C++, he says. Can you imagine if the president of the United States could, you know, code in C++?
Well, to his credit, Obama has promoted coding as the, you know, maybe over-promoted the future, coding for the future, but that's impressive. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because C++ is a non-trivial undertaking by all accounts.
I will try to ask.
Yeah.
I would have taken PHP, but C++ is impressive.
Say, can you give us some cold samples? What's your GitHub reputation? Do you have any commits?
Matt Phoebe, is there... Okay, so Phoebe, a question I could actually ask besides that.
Oh, you got to ask him the one for, you know, President Obama, which was basically, if you had to sort a million numbers, would you go with a bubble sort or a quick sort? You know, and he'll be like, definitely not a bubble sort. And then everybody can clap.
That would be awesome.
It would be pretty awesome.
Well, you know, I have been reading Donald Knuth lately, and as a matter of fact, wow, there you go, programmer humor. There is a lot of AMP news, but I'm going to I guess I should defer it. Good article though in the Monday note, which is
I was reading that one. That actually looks pretty well put together.
I thought so. This is from Frédéric Filou, who co-authors this with Jean-Louis Gasset. Google's AMP poised to take the lead from Facebook and Apple's walled gardens, and that is the point that Jonathan Abrams made as well. Is hey, if the alternative is Facebook or Apple News or Facebook's what do they call them, Stories, then this is a better solution. And I think it really isn't necessarily a better solution. It's just, who do you trust, Google, Facebook, or Apple? I think they're similar solutions in some ways, aren't they?
Well, they're similar in that they're all HTML subsets, which means that you have to, like, mind your
One's
HTML
open source, Google's.
Google's one is open source and is closer to HTML, though it still has a bunch of weirdnesses in, like, refine image and audio and video. Facebook's one... I'm trying to remember which Facebook's one is kind of its own subset of HTML with a bunch of weird suggestions of what you use. So it's basically parsing bits of HTML, ignoring other bits. And Apple's one is two things, is a sort of strange hybrid because it's partly RSS with HTML in and partly its own markup XML language, which is kind of like the stuff they use for the Apple TV and the stuff that's internal to the iTunes store. So basically, you end up having to write a translator from your content management system into three new markup languages. And of those, Google's one is AMP is the simplest of those, I think, because it is mostly HTML.
Is it conceivable, Matt, there could be some sort of preprocessor that would you could run your page through and get all three?
I mean, there's already, like WordPress plugins, for example, so that you don't have to worry about it yourself. Right. So in theory, you can have something like that that generates it. I think for me, the bigger hurdle is how do you, you know, get into Apple News? I'm not exactly sure what the process for that would be. With Google, you know, it's you just add your RHEL AMP link or whatever, and it sort of can get auto-discovered. But I'm not sure what the filter is for Facebook or Apple News.
The other thing Fiyu talks about a little bit is the paywall issue. He says AMP engineering is insistently asked by publishers ranging from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Financial Times to Les Echos for some way to have paywalls work with AMP. And that's difficult because of the multiple caches involved. But apparently AMP engineers
they're working on that. The paywall places want some help with paywalls from both AMP and Instant Articles.
I'd love to see Google. I'd love to see AMP say no paywall. that's the solution. Well, no paywall.
Well, but the problem is you want to help publishers because if you don't have a strong web, then you need publishers. But we try to help with like First Click Free, for example, which is in Google search results.
Right.
Or, there's been a lot of attempts to support that. But,
yeah. Or a limited viewing of a document, as a few points out, where you get the first half of the document, but then AMP.
Yeah. Or Google contributor. So, but you have to solve this problem for publishers. So I think it's good that Google's trying and AMP is trying to tackle that problem.
By the way, I have to say I use Google contributor and I'm seeing it more and more places. I'm really pleased about that.
Yay.
That to me more than AMP is a contribution to this whole ad blocking fiasco. What do you think, Jeff, of characterizing as Doc Searles and others, of characterizing the ad blocking as a boycott?
I think that's a fair argument, don't you?
It is us as users saying nothing against you news organizations or you website guys, but we're going to boycott your ads.
Yeah, I think we messed up the web. We publishers messed up the web with advertisers. Yeah.
I don't even blame publishers. I really blame the ad tech guys. I blame
ad tech too. But just ad salespeople, ad agencies, brands. We all just threw more junk on, and then with it, you know, another line of JavaScript, and we messed up the web.
Doc Searles had a great blog post a couple of days ago, rethinking John Wanamaker. Wanamaker's the guy who probably didn't say it. Apparently, but it is a great quote. He says, I know half of my ads don't work. I just don't know which half. But he makes the point that really brand ads are the kind of advertising people should be embarked on. He said, this whole notion that targeting people, aiming like with laser-like precision at somebody who has done a search for men's undergarments and bombarding them. He says, we don't know if somebody's in the market. We can't tell. There's no way of knowing if they're about to buy. He said the best way to advertise is with brand advertising. A brand, and this is from a Journal of Advertising Research article, The Waste in Advertising is the Part That Works. Brand advertising has the effect of making a company familiar, whether the audience likes it or not. And that is a requirement for any large company selling to a large market. You may never buy a Ford F-150 truck, but you're damn sure going to know about it if you watch football on TV. In other words, it doesn't hurt to have everybody you know who you are and what you sell. And when the time comes to buy something, those familiar names leap to mind. And ad tech really, he says ad tech really misunderstands. It's not an effective way to reach people. I mean, aside from the thing that has annoyed your customers to the point where they're blocking you.
Right. Yes.
That's a side effect. But he says this is a kind of a misunderstanding of how advertising works. And Doc is, I kind of agree with him. And Doc's the guy who wrote the Clue Train Manifesto and co-wrote it. Go ahead.
Well, that's it. There's kind of three kinds of advertising. There's the stuff that Doc is talking about there, which is the brand advertising, which is I want to show this to a large number of people and create a footprint in the world.
Right. And that's the kind of ads you see on major networks, on the Super Bowl, that kind of thing. Yes. That's not direct response
or actual billboards, as you said. Yeah. Billboard is a classic thing there. Yeah. Then there's the very strongly targeted advertising, which is basically the thing Google invented with search advertising, which is I know you're searching for something, and I will discreetly add some links to the side that give you places to buy that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again, clearly valuable because it's targeted. And then there's this fuzzy thing in the middle, which is this notional targeted stuff, which is in this, which is the stuff that Maciej Czechlowski writes about wonderfully, where basically there's this giant arms race to gather more and more information with decreasing returns, because they're trying desperately to intuit what will make you buy something, and we are gradually learning that all the things that work the first time don't work anymore. And that's the bit that's metastasized, and this is why there's the backlash, because there is this notion that the more information you have about the end user, the more precisely you can target them. And actually that's been a bit dubious for a long time. And this was, the challenge was, advertising was always a let's try and subdivide the audience into different people and sell advertising to that targeted group. That's how magazines and newspapers got away with charging high ad rates for a long time, because they were saying, well, we've got a great audience full of rich people doing this kind of thing, and therefore you should advertise to those. And again, that works if you're like, I have a brand, but it's only valuable to this set of people. But the notion of the micro-targeting, I think, has been less effective than that.
Talk has also written a blog post called Apple's Content Blocking is Chemo for the Cancer of Ad Tech. So we know on which side he sits. Matt, yeah. You might agree with that, actually.
Brave. So
hold on, Matt.
Matt, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, I love Contributor. I love Patreon. And I saw that Patreon raised money this week, and
oh,
it's
great.
Just
that's great.
If you can have patron supported, you know, enterprise, then you've got support from the people that you love, your 1,000 fans, and it's exactly the kind of thing where everybody's happy. And so what you were saying, where more and more people, you see more and more sites using Google Contributor, I see that as well, and I'm very happy about that. And I just kind of hope, if we could get to an inflection point where enough people know about it and enough publishers use it, you know, why wouldn't you try that as a business model for a publisher? You know, it's just extra money and lets people support the sort of sites that they love.
One of the things Google Contributor lets you do is replace ads with the image of your choice, and I decided to put kittens on pages, and I have now many, many pages with cats.
So I had Jack Conte come to an event at CUNY, a small work group about public media a week ago. What a star he is. He's just
great, isn't he?
He's phenomenal.
His story is great too, because he and his wife Natalie have had a musical group called Pomplamoose. They still do, and they put a lot of heart and soul and sweat into YouTube videos. Get millions of views and a few thousand bucks, and it didn't make up for the cost or the effort they put into it. And he said, "There's got to be a better way," and founded Patreon. Scratched his own itch and has really empowered a lot of people, including many podcasters, to do that. It's one route, but it is kind of a pure route. It's a nice route. I like it. I agree with
you. Let's go back to Apple for one second, if we could. I think we might have missed this story, and I think it's critical. Apple killed its ad service, fired its ad staff, and this, what's key about this is, and I've said this for some time, Apple failed at advertising, and thus Apple is now motivated to pull the rug out from everyone else who depends on advertising. So watch for Apple to get more and more hostile to advertising on mobile, which is where everything's going to go, and is going to be more, I'll bet they're going to make ad blockers defaulted. And they're just going to say, "Yeah, the publishers." And
they're making
the advertising world.
They're making a virtue out of a necessity. Because I think the truth is, I had failed, and they were putting too many restrictions on advertisers. It was too much work. There were a lot of reasons. It was the little banner ads you see in apps and things like that. Oftentimes, a full page takeover in apps. So they're shutting it down. But what they're doing is double. I agree with you, Jeff, is going to double down on this. Oh, but we're all for user privacy, and obviously, running an ad network is kind of counter to that notion. So I think
it's the thumb up the nose of or other bodily orifice of Google.
Yeah.
It's the way Apple can fight Google.
I don't think it's – you need not say a thumb in the, up the nose. Merely a way to position themselves as the privacy company.
I think they can actively hurt Google.
I'd be very careful about thumbing Google's nose as Microsoft has learned to its detriment, I think. Now, after the Gmail man ads, put them in an awkward position.
It was interesting to me that Microsoft, for a while in Internet Explorer, was proposing blocking any third-party thing that was included for more than like 3 sites, which would have the net effect of blocking like all analytics and a ton of different ad things. And so Microsoft pulled back from that based on what a lot of people said. But it seems like Apple, to Jeff's point, has kind of at least enabled that, or, you know, a couple steps of indirection enabled that. And what's also interesting to me is people love Patreon, which takes, I think, 5% cut. And people sort of chafe at maybe Apple taking a 30% cut of purchases. And so it's interesting to think about that spectrum of, like, where does the love start, you know, and where does it become a business transaction? People love CD Baby and those kinds of businesses. Right. And maybe it's just that it's a small percentage. I'm not sure.
Kevin?
Well, I think that's right. I think there is a transition here from what you can support with what. Because part of what we've learned from Patreon and Kickstarter and other systems like that is that actually people are willing to pay for things, but they're willing to pay different amounts of money for different things, and that depends on how much they like the thing and how much disposable income they have. Whereas advertising assumes that nobody wants to pay very much and commoditizes them all down to a uniform amount per person and spreads it out over that. So in effect, it only actually does work if you have millions of people watching, whereas Patreon, Kickstarter, and other things of that ilk can work if you have thousands of people watching if they care enough. And I think that's an interesting transformation of the media scene, and one that hasn't fully sunk in yet.
All I was going to say, sorry for the lag here. Paying for is a critical phrase here because they're not paying for access on Patreon, really. They're paying to support.
Absolutely. Yeah, because even if you don't contribute, you get the podcast or the music or whatever.
It's, right. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a key difference. You're supporting versus paying to get.
And by the way, it's very limited what you can do with that, I'll be honest with you, because we tried to do that for several years at the beginning. Now, of course, we didn't have the infrastructure of Patreon, but there was no way I could have built Twit without advertising.
Right.
There's just nobody was going to give enough money to do what we've done. Even when we sold bricks to build the studio, we sold 1,800 bricks. It only went about a quarter of the way toward building the studio.
Right.
So,
but you are on the other end of that spectrum in that you do have, you know, you're in the millions.
No, I agree. But if you want to have that spectrum, you have to have a spectrum of monetization options. If you want everything to be small and user, you know, the patronage system is a great system, but there's only a few Michelangelos that can be, you know, and I think even fewer Medicis.
But there's even fewer New York Timeses. Is the point? I think you can. I think if you frame it that way around, you've got it slightly backwards. In that, there are many people who could have their artistic work.
Right. We want many. That's right. That's right.
Whereas there is this sort of,
there should be only one Twit.
There you go. But there is this. I had this. I went to the Social Computing Symposium in New York last week and one of the sessions there was TV people talking about how they use social media, and it was fascinating to hear their point of view on it, which is that their point of view is that TV is a wonderful thing because it enables us to do these large scale things, and it's like, well, it enables you to do those large scale things, but to say that the net doesn't enable that is to miss the point that it enables a gigantic range of things that TV cuts off.
It's
very hard for those two mindsets to meet, because if you are successful in big media, it's difficult to take the kind of leap that you took, Leo, and say, okay, I can do this myself on my own time and on my own skill. It's not a trivial thing to do, and it's actually very hard. For them to, you know, it's easier for them to say what we need is to find the people who are doing something in the sort of in this trivial net media over here and make them into TV stars. And that's the sort of the mindset you get.
Yeah.
It's basically the original Max Headroom movie, 20 minutes into the future.
You actually are Max Headrooming right now, which is kind of an amazing kind of juxtaposition. We have a great panel, and we're going to put up with some of the bandwidth issues. Jeff Jarvis, of course, is in Switzerland at Davos at the World Economic Forum. Actually, his bandwidth's not too bad. He's doing all right. It's Kevin March in the heart of Silicon Valley who's having the most trouble.
It's the Koblenz children here, isn't it?
It tells you something, doesn't it?
Ready for Google Fiber to get to my house.
Also with us, Matt Cutts. Who has, do you have Google Fiber in your home? I wish. Think you did. I know. I want to believe you do.
Oh, man. I would pay so much for Google Fiber.
Who wouldn't?
But you just can't get it. Oh. Yeah, so.
Can't get it. Even if you work for the big G or the big A. Do you work for A or G?
I work for G.
Okay. Not for A.
Not for A.
Not for A.
G and A.
G and A. I could go somewhere with that, but I'm not.
Yep.
Our show today brought to you by those good folks at FreshBooks. You know, one of the things that we try to do with our advertisers is instead of imposing them upon you, is more like an introduction. I always think of it as kind of we look for advertisers that match our ethics, our interests, that offer a product that we think our audience would be interested in, and then we make the introduction. So I would like to introduce you to my good friend, FreshBooks. I happen to know FreshBooks pretty well because it saved my life when I was a freelancer. About 10 years ago, I was, I hated, and I'm sure you do too if you're in the freelancer or your small business, I hated the end of the month because that meant, oh, now it's time to go fire up Microsoft Word and start doing the invoices. And, oh, and by the way, you might as well fire up Excel, too, because I'm invoicing people in the different currencies. And, oh, yeah, I got to do time and hours. I got to get all those receipts out of the shoebox. By the end of that, it was like, I'll do it next month. And the problem with doing it next month, unfortunately, is that means you don't get paid till next month or the month after or the month after. After whining about this for a while, Amber MacArthur told me, I have some friends who've started this thing called FreshBooks. You really ought to check it out. And, you know, she was right. Since then, more than 5 million people have used FreshBooks. They love it, and you will too. You no more putting invoices together in Word. You just set up these professional-looking invoices. It's easy when it comes invoice time to import your receipts from the FreshBooks app. You just take a picture of the receipt. Your time and hours, too. The app will track those. It's just a super simple cloud accounting solution that really helps you save time billing and get paid faster. Plus, they've announced some nice new features. They really are expanding. They have a card reader. So turns out a number of FreshBooks customers are people who go to houses like contractors and plumbers, building inspectors. They go to houses. They do some work. Maybe they present an estimate, do some work, present an invoice. FreshBooks is just going to totally. You can send an estimate right after the handshake from the FreshBooks iPhone app. You can send an invoice right after you do the work. And then they've got a FreshBooks card reader. You plug into the iPhone. It's EMV enabled, so you can swipe the stripe or dip the chip, take your payment, and you're on your way. It is heaven. You're going to love FreshBooks. I want you to try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twig. FreshBooks.com/twig, T-W-I-G. And don't forget to use to tell them, I heard it on This Week in Google. They'll ask you at some point, I think. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank them for supporting this episode of This Week in Google. FreshBooks.com/twig. I'm sorry, I can't resist twisting the dagger a little bit. I see that Gawker is selling a stake to an investment company to raise money, they say, for two reasons. Partly to fund expansions into video and e-commerce, but mostly girding ourselves for Hulk Hogan's lawsuit. $100 million lawsuit. Gawker obtained a video that showed him. Well, I don't even want to say it was really appalling, and they're an appalling company, and I just can't wait to watch them spend all that money in court. I'm sorry, had to twist the dagger just a little bit. Hey, another thing. As long as I'm getting personal here, I'm trying to buy a Tesla X. You know, that's the one with this. This company has the worst customer service I have ever experienced in
my
life.
You're kidding me.
I thought they were supposed to be the new... So first of all, you pay them $5,000 just to get on the waiting list, right? That's just to get on the waiting list. So I got the email last week saying, okay, congratulations. Thanks for the $5,000 6 months ago. We've really enjoyed the float. Now it's time for you to design your Tesla. I've been waiting for this. So I went online and I picked a color. And then I'm looking in vain for a delivery date or whatever. They say, you have 1 week to change your design as of Saturday, this coming Saturday. You're committed, baby. And you can't back out of this because we've already started to make it. I mean, they're really like, we've already started to make it. So I thought, well, I would really like to test drive this, look at the color I chose, just kind of. So I called Tesla and I got a guy at in charge of sales. He's in Fremont. He's at the factory, I presume. He sounded like he just woke up from a nap, to be perfectly frank. And I said, a couple of things. I'd like to test drive. He said, no, you can't do that. I understand. All right, I understand. No. It's a new car. They haven't been making many with a doors that go like that. Can I see a paint chip or anything? No, I don't think so. I said, well, here's the real thing. My lease doesn't run out until September. I'd like to, kind of arrange it so that I don't get the Tesla till my lease, around when my lease. I'll pay an extra month or whatever, but I want to kind of get it in that time frame. Can you tell me? It's supposed to tell me on the page, but I don't see it anywhere when I'll get it. He says, no, I don't know. I said, you mean, see, because you understand, I'm trying to figure out if this Tesla will arrive like in a week, in a month, in 6 months, in a year. Can you give me it? No. I said, is there anyone there who knows? He said, I could write an email for you. I said, well, okay, it's a start. Send an email. That's good. He said, okay, well, let me write an email. So you're going out of the country? Is that the problem? I said, no, I'm not going out of the country. What do you? I just told you. I just have a lease. Oh, yeah. Dave's not here, man. What's your name again? No, he has my name. I said, do you have my name? He said, oh, yeah, I have it all in front of me. I guess they look up the phone number. He knows everything. He knows exactly what I'm ordering and everything. So they got that part down. So he says, somebody will call you. So this is 3 or 4 days ago. I haven't heard from anybody. So now I don't know what to do because Saturday I'm in. And it could arrive next week or it could arrive next year.
You can't cancel.
No.
Oh.
And I get, and by the way, I just saw that they're suing a German company because apparently the doors that do this don't do that. So they have a problem. So I have to decide between now and Saturday. I'm in a Jeff Jarvis funk. Tesla turns out to be the new Verizon. Hey, who knew? So now I have to figure out, should I cancel this? But I really want it, but I don't know. And in fact, it could come, it might, I don't know. I think I can get my $5,000 back. I don't really know. They don't say anything about that.
Dave's not here, man.
I saw an international Audi executive at an event in Munich, and I couldn't help myself. He said, I got a bone to pick with you. You know what he's fearing?
And I said,
when's Android Auto?
I want Android Auto.
Dork. American dork.
I think part of this is just you're buying a car that they never made. I mean, this is they're just making them.
So. Would you buy an Apple product for the first time? You're never right. You've said that. I shouldn't buy it.
Well, it's crazy. You
shouldn't.
But they have made some. But I said, can I test drive it? No, we don't have any. What do you think, Matt?
Here in Europe.
You're like me.
I was in a similar situation. I actually put a down payment down on a Tesla when it was the Model S.
I had a feeling.
And I eventually pulled it back.
Uh-huh.
Because there was just too many. I was like, you can always buy it a little later.
Mm-hmm.
There's always time.
I'm sure if I were buying an S now, I could at least test drive it and look at a paint chip.
Right.
I'm sure that's much more like the normal car experience. But I just wanted to tell people.
It's weird that you can't see the colors because you'd think they'd have the same colors on the Model S as on the X.
You can see it on the web, but I don't know. I mean, the web, as you know, you don't know what that color really is going to look like. It's called titanium. It looks like bronze. I don't know what it is.
Well, anyway. There are Tesla showrooms.
Yeah, but there are no X's in the showrooms.
Right.
And you know what? I don't know. This guy, he just woke up from a nap. Maybe I could go see a Model S in that color. I don't know. He just said no. I'll decide by Friday whether to cancel it or not.
But the test drive was not a great experience.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah. See?
Really?
See, that's why I want to test drive it.
I do have a ton of friends who love their Tesla.
I know. Right? That's the other side of it.
So
everybody I know says, oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh.
It's a good problem to have. Like, what delightful new car should I have?
Well, my lease runs out in September, and I just have to decide. And like you, Jeff, I want, I'd love to have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. And but now the Tesla doesn't have that. So I'm thinking maybe now I should just get a Ford and just do the right. Just be smart. Just get a Ford. You can't go wrong with a Ford.
What Ford would you get?
I don't know. Plug-in hybrid, probably. I mean, I got solar panels, and I ordered a Powerwall because I thought I was getting a Tesla. But
oh,
this is ending up to be like a ridiculously expensive savings.
Well, that's your life.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? By the way, I'm sorry. Jack Dorsey is no longer a billionaire.
Yeah. Pity.
I figure he's not alone. The stock market really tanked today.
Oh, what do you mean today? It's been a week of tanking.
Yeah. Shares on Twitter, along with every other, and Square, and every other tech company plummeted again today. So his wealth, which was once $2 billion before Square went public, he's only worth $944. Oh, I'm sorry, $944 million.
That just jumped up. No.
There's a big difference.
But he's no longer a member of the Trace Commas Club.
He's not in the Three Comma Club, the Trace Commas Club.
But didn't he also give like $200 million or $300 million of his Twitter stock to the employees?
Is that not awesome?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give extra points for that. That's
yeah.
He's probably cool.
That is really impressive. And obviously, when you have $944 million, you're not really counting the commas. Maybe you are. I don't know. He has a car with doors that go like this. Doors that go like that. Little Silicon Valley reference. When's that coming back? Hey, let me ask you, Matt Cutts. Do the guys at Google watch that and laugh and say Hooli?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic show.
It's so inside. Jokes. Yeah.
Yes.
In fact,
really good stuff.
Yeah, thanks to Dan Lyons, I think, the inside, it's really a show that probably is better appreciated in Silicon Valley than outside of it.
I saw Dan a few days ago in Munich.
Really? How's he doing? Is he still writing for...
I didn't talk much. He talked about doing stuff for entertainment. Yeah, yeah.
He's got a book coming out.
Yeah, well, that's been controversial. Not for him, but for the people.
Do you think it's a tell-all kind of? It's about HubSpot.
Remember somebody got fired for trying to get the copy of his proposal or some such thing. I can't remember what the story was.
So Dan Lyons is a really fascinating story. He was the fake Steve Jobs. He was writing at Newsweek when he was doing that. Or Time, some journal. And no one knew who the fake Steve Jobs blog was written by, but everybody read it, loved it. It was hysterical. Turned out it was him. He's got this great Boston accent, too, so I hear him reading it. So for some reason, then he moved to HubSpot, which was like a social, I don't know what it was. It was a social network, but
content marketing. So basically, it's like they call it inbound marketing. So the point is it's using social media stuff to bring you clients in a sensible way rather than a spammy advertising way.
Yeah.
That's their broad pitch. So they've got a bunch of tools for bringing, helping you make sense of explaining your stuff online to social media and things.
So that he left.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how he fit in there, and I don't think he was sure either.
No, he wasn't. I remember meeting him at the Moto X event at Google, and he was like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but anyway. And I love him. I really like Dan. And then, although others in the industry do not, I know a certain well-known tech journalist who says, I will not be in the same room with Dan Lyons. which makes it all the more interesting. Anyway, so Dan then left and was editor of Gawker for 1 week. Literally.
Yep. Ballywag. Yeah.
A Ballywag.
Ballywag. Yeah. Gawker.
For 1 week. And then said, oh, I screw it. I'm going to write a book.
But they didn't.
And now he's working. He's one of the writers at Silicon Valley. But he did write the book. It's apparently tell all about HubSpot, right?
I think that's right. Yeah, some HubSpot people got in trouble for trying to
steal the manuscript.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
Yeah, but where is it?
He spent the IPO of HubSpot, didn't he? So he joined them, and then they went public.
Awesome. That was a good move.
Well, his first book, Steve Jobs, was really funny. So hopefully the second one will be really good, too.
Yeah. He's a muckraker, a scathing memoir. He's described his memoir about his stint at HubSpot as scathing. Scathing. He does there some The Office vibe was frat house meets cult compound, according to the publisher. Shower pods became hookup dens. Nerf gun fights broke out at lunch. And absent bosses specialized in cryptic jargon-filled emails. Matt, you're smiling.
I think we ought to send Dan Lyons to a bunch of different companies to report back. I think a lot of this stuff happens.
Sounds like Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so let him wait around in there and bring back what he finds. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I have to stand corrected. It was not literally 1 week at Valleywag. It was six. Literally a month and a half.
Gentlemen,
is it time to go to bed?
Yes, it is. I left the hotel room at 6:30 this morning. I haven't been back.
Oh, you're not going to go to the parties? Come on, you know you're going to stop off.
I probably actually need to stop by one of them.
Say hi.
I'm not going to the piano bar tonight.
Who are you
going to
look for?
I don't know. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, is he there?
Yes. Yeah, he's there.
Tell him hi for me.
Will do.
No, he knows me.
Will do.
He knows who I am.
Yeah.
We've had words.
That's right. I had dinner. It was one of these program dinners tonight. I had dinner tonight with John Green.
Ah.
Who's great, Vlogbrothers and VidCon and all that.
Yeah.
He was just delightful, just a nice guy. And my daughter, having seen that John Green was saying he was in Davos, for the first time, she was impressed that I was here. You're the same thing with John Green.
Whoa, dude, he's a YouTube star.
So he was nice enough to he took my phone from me when I showed her the email, and he sent an email back to her immediately, which was nice of him.
All right, we're all gonna sing you a lullaby, Jeff. And then would you leave your headset for Kevin Marks, because yours is working so much better?
I wish it was the headset.
I don't know. It's bandwidth. I think your bandwidth is dying.
It's funny. You. Just now my bandwidth started going.
Okay. Jeff Jarvis, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find him at buzzmachine.com. His Tales of Davos will be coming out.
And I hope I'm supposed to fly back Sunday, but now there's a huge blizzard headed to New York.
Snowpocalypse 2.
I don't know when I'm getting back.
The quickening.
We'll see. Yep.
All right. Well, we hope we'll see you next week on This Week in Google.
Maybe from Zurich. Yeah.
From Zurich.
Good night.
I can think of better reasons. Bye-bye. Better. No better reason.
I want to be home.
All right. Well, go to bed then.
All right. Thanks. Good night.
BuzzMachine.com. Geeks bearing news. Geeks bearing gifts. All about the news industry. And all sorts of other great stuff. Public Parts. What Would Google Do? Jeff Jarvis, everybody. We love our Jeff. Also with us, it's great to have Matt Cutts from Google. But he's not representing Google. He's here representing himself and his beard. Is there a Twitter account, Matt Cutts Beard, yet?
No.
There will be soon.
Yeah.
I can almost guarantee it. Also, Kevin Marks from his own walled garden.
Fence garden, anyway.
And some beautiful citrus trees in the background there. KevinMarks.com. And, of course, we'll find out more about the Indie Web, IndieWebCamp.com. Kevin's a big proponent of free and open web protocols. If you are not yet a subscriber to our Twit newsletter, good news. You can be a charter subscriber. You can get the very first newsletter, which goes out Sunday. If you go to twit.tv/newsletter and subscribe, it's double opt-in. So, you know, we're not going to opt you in. You got to send an email and click a link. We'll send you an email. You click a link. What is that? Some words just flew in. Were those left off the newsletter? And now they flew right off the lower third. I've never seen that happen. They escaped. twit.tv/newsletter is the place if you'd like to get our newsletter. And I will be writing little blurbs in there and others. It'll be mostly a look at what's ahead in the week on the network. Twit, twit.tv/newsletter. Somebody tie those letters down. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your next website, your blog, your portfolio. If you're an artist or photographer, if you're a restaurant, put your menu up there. If you're a business and you don't have a website, this is a great solution. It's easy, it's inexpensive, it's fast. You don't have to be an expert in web technologies. They've got it all set up for you, everything from mobile responsive design to e-commerce built into every single template. And when it comes to e-commerce, what's really nice about Squarespace is instead of, you know, somebody tries to buy something, let's say you're a band, you're selling your music, instead of pushing you off to some shopping cart on some other site that doesn't look anything like what you'd like it to look, your e-commerce lives on your page and it looks like your page. It's got the design. And I think that's really nice. It's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store beautifully. They have a basic plan and an advanced plan with features for your growing business. You'll also get a free domain name when you subscribe for a year, which is really great. Best hosting, best software makes the best website. And if you want to get geeky, not only are there kind of unlimited settings for fonts, colors, page configurations, they allow you to use all the Google typefaces, all of that. But they even have a developer platform that lets you really dig into the nitty-gritty. You can even create your own template if you want. I love Squarespace. I use the cover page at leoville.com as a way to kind of introduce myself. I use the blog, the portfolio. It's a little slideshow at leoville.com. You can check that out. And what's fun is there you go. There's Jeff and Gina from Google I.O. It even animated GIFs are supported. Squarespace.com. I'll tell you what, it's free to try, but if you decide to buy, and I think you will, use the promo code TWIG and you'll get 10% off. TWIG, the promo code, Squarespace. You should. Kevin Marks is here. Matt Cutts is here. We're talking about Google. We're talking about Facebook. Interesting article in Fortune today about Facebook's walled garden. Some publishers, perhaps, not so excited. AOL is teaming up with Microsoft and Verizon to say, we want to control distribution. And the founder and CEO of New York-based Taboola, interestingly enough.
They're getting multiple mentions in this episode.
It is the Taboola show. He says, I'm scared of a future where Facebook's getting 80% of your business. That's true, but I'm also scared of a future where there's Taboola on every page. Taboola, by the way, is not the fine thing called tabbouleh, which is a lovely salad dish made of, what is it, wheat groats? What's in tabbouleh? Something odd, but it's delicious. Taboola and AOL have announced a 3-year partnership. What, by the way, what is, did you see the story that AOL may want to rebrand itself?
Yeah.
What would happen to your SEO if you changed the name of your company that's been like one of... And yet, at the same time, America Online does sound a little bit like a CD in the mail for a dial-up service.
Right.
I think they have a problem.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. AOL is now TechCrunch and Gadget. The Huffington Post is much more of a content play than anything else. But I don't know what name you could pick that would... I don't know how you could do that. You're kind of stuck with it.
Somebody said AOLOLOLOL or something.
AOLOL is good. Bulger, by the way.
I like AOL. Let me be perfectly clear. I like a lot of the properties that they have. But somebody had tweeted that.
I spent a lot of time on AOL. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bulger is the wheat product that is in Taboola.
Bulger wheat. Okay.
Yeah, bulger wheat.
Did you see the article about Google Core update algorithm continues as SEOs notice weekend Google update?
Yeah, let me ask you about Penguin, because I guess we're getting close to the new Penguin's an algorithm. Is that right?
Penguin is an algorithm. Yeah, the it's kind of interesting. Where our rule of thumb is never to announce stuff in the future because you know it could slip or you know for various other reasons we might want to go back and tweak things. So I think. Folks at Google had been like, okay, Penguin is coming. And then the holidays came and they're like, well, let's hold off on Penguin for a little while longer. And in general, around the holidays, Google doesn't want to create extra stress for publishers and webmasters and SEOs. So we tend not to roll out a lot of algorithmic changes right in the middle of December. But then what happens is if you freeze your code, then people keep working, and come January 1st, January 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, people are like, okay, we get to launch everything. Yay. And so my suspicion, I don't know for sure, is that this particular change, I don't think that it was Penguin. It was just there's a lot of stuff that's been building up in the pipeline, and now the code freeze has been lifted, and we're ready to start launching stuff. And so you see a lot more changes often right at the beginning of the year because, you know, everything's been waiting to go out.
I love this article by Barry Schwartz in the Search Engine Roundtable. Google's Gary Ilias shares confidential screenshot that reveals nothing.
Yeah, that was a little, not mean, but a little funny.
So he says, Barry Schwartz, I heard you wanted pictures. Here's one of my screen. Yes, I do. Thank you.
Well, and Barry does something where every day he publishes a picture related to Google.
Oh, the search photo of the day.
Yeah. So he was saying it's been slim pickings. And so here you go. Here's a confidential. Maybe it's how long the videos are. We have no idea.
We've had Barry on the show. We love him. And so Gary Ilias is your colleague, I imagine, webmaster trends analyst at Google.
Yeah, he, along with John Mueller, and there's actually several webmaster trends analysts, do a fantastic job of letting people know about new things happening, in addition to the Google Webmaster blog. They do webmaster hangouts, mm-hmm. all sorts of great ways mm-hmm. to help people.
So he kind of implied that Penguin was imminent.
Yeah, and I suspect it will be coming. And I know the web spam team has been thinking hard about, do you do it as a single kind of push, or do you do it so that it's continuously updating, like PageRank continuously updates? And so it tends to be, you do these things manually until you get a good handle on it, and then after a while, you can figure out how to make it work continuously. So,
and Search Engine Land had a story that said that fluctuations, what are fluctuations?
Just ranking changes.
Ranking changes. And that was not due to Penguin, but that was due to just updates to PageRank, to the core. Would you please explain? You know what? This is a great time. And Kevin, you'll forgive me if I'm sure know all of this.
I went through the induction at Google, so I probably know some of it.
Yeah.
Knows way more than anyone else.
So what are we talking here? Everybody knows PageRank, named after Larry Page. It's the very famous kind of algorithm that put Google on the map. In my limited understanding, the notion of PageRank is you rank higher as long, it's kind of recursive, as long as the more higher ranked pages link to you.
Yep.
And that's still in effect. That's not changing.
Well, we still have a system called PageRank. Over time, some of the underlying representations and how we run the algorithms have changed, but the intuition is still the same. The intuition is roughly, if you were surfing around on the web, what sort of pages would you be likely to end up on? It's basically a measure of reputation. And so we compute PageRank differently than we might have in the initial patent disclosures and the initial papers, but the end result is still basically the same. The highly reputable sites tend to have high PageRank, and the ones that are, not very well known or don't have a lot of links tend to have lower PageRank.
But I remember in the early days talking to Larry, and I don't really understand what it meant, but he said, I will look at the end of the line on this, like I'll go to the end of the printout and look at it and tweak the algorithm. I don't even know what that means.
Well, if you look at page sites sorted by PageRank, you'd get to the very bottom, and I'm guessing about what he's meaning, but if you get to a site at the very bottom and you're like, well, I expect this to have pretty good PageRank, and it doesn't,
right,
then you might go back and retweak the algorithm.
Okay, that's probably what he meant.
Yeah.
I always thought seeds and stems somehow involved, but I don't. That's probably not it. But it's kind of like the stuff that kind of, it's the detritus after all of the index works. And why isn't this, what is this? Why is this here? What is this doing? I mean, something has to be at the bottom, obviously.
Yeah. And there's always more pages that we could crawl.
Right.
So you always have to make that.
There's always
that
more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the algorithm is always being tweaked somewhat.
Yeah.
And then there are these named things like Penguin. What is that?
So Penguin is more targeted towards web spam. Panda is more targeted towards quality. Hummingbird is more, doing weightings about, overall queries. So usually they don't give them names. If it's something that people might really notice, then you'd then you'd be more likely to give an algorithm a name.
Because this is happening every day, probably, right?
Oh, yeah. Like 500 changes launch every year.
Wow. You
know, 500 plus.
So several times a day. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's why if you don't launch anything or don't launch any major changes in ranking, you know, right before the holidays, why all that would, you know,
it's
would
accumulated.
Have more changes. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like a roll-up. It's like a hot fix roll-up. How does, just out of curiosity, so there's like a team of search engineers.
Oh, yeah.
And then what? There's a meeting saying, I'm thinking of changing the algorithm to do this. Somebody proposes a change.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then,
and in fact,
go ahead. Tell me how it works.
Oh, well, yeah, it works exactly the way you'd think it would work. You've got smart people looking at search results and even looking at queries and when that failed, and they come up with new ideas for how to improve things. Once they have ideas, they test it out, you know, sort of in a sandbox. And then if that works, then they'll roll it out in testing more broadly, even on the live search results. And then they take all of that to a weekly meeting.
Okay.
Or sometimes it happens more than once a week where they say, here's a change, here's what it affects, here's how many users are affected in each language. And then they debate the relative merits of, does it make the system more complex. Now, one interesting thing is they actually produced a video of one of these meetings. And so you can go and find like a 10-minute segment of people discussing an actual algorithmic change and whether to launch it or not.
Yeah.
So that is,
I remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those must be fascinating meetings. Wow.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So...
But, I mean, the other thing to take away from that that's also fascinating is that they're continually running experiments. Anytime using Google, you may be part of multiple experiments at once. And one of the smart things that they did was enabling that sort of facility that meant that it wasn't a big change once a month, but they were able to continuously roll different things in and out.
So this is the quality launch review meeting. Mm-hmm. Happens on Thursdays. And in this case, they're talking about spelling. Mm-hmm. Something to do with spelling. Look at all these. This is so cool.
There's Amit Singhal. He's the head of all of search.
Yep.
You know, there's Paul and Tristan. I won't identify them by last name.
But what's nice is this video has pop-up video. So
yeah,
you can, it's kind of fun. You can actually listen to it. And
who's that chap in the white shirt?
Are you in that video?
Yeah. I would go to those meetings as well. So, They tried to figure out how to make these meetings interesting, because for a lot of people they might consider it dull as dust. I, you know, for techies it's pretty fascinating, but it's
it looks like a UN conference. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, the little microphones, you almost feel like there should be simultaneous translation going on. It's a big deal.
They'll have, you know, engineers dialing in from Japan or all kinds of other places. And then you've got people around the table who are experts who have really dug into – you have a separate evaluation group.
Right.
And so they have evaluated each individual change. And those people get – those their voices get a lot of weight whenever you're deciding whether to launch something.
And you were there in your role as spam fighters to kind of just – in case something has an impact on the work you do.
Yeah, or publishers, webmasters in general.
Okay, so you represent the webmasters as well.
Yeah. Now that was, you know, I've been out on leave, so I haven't been in these meetings for a while.
Well, I can tell your beard's considerably longer now.
Yes, that's...
Incidentally, just to make you happy, let's see what's going on with Matt Cutts. Wait a minute, I'm trying to link to this.
No.
Yes,
no.
Yes, it's happened.
Oh, no. Oh, what do we have?
I knew the minute I said that it was all over. Matt Cutts, at Matt Cutts Beard.
20 minutes. That was fast.
By the way, I also have another important thing to tell you. Today is Penguin Awareness Day. Now, I admit there's one of two big penguin days. April 25th is World Penguin Day.
Whoa.
So you've got two important benchmarks here if you want to release penguin.
We should do it on those dates. That would be hilarious.
Penguin Awareness Day.
They're like, I didn't want to be that aware of penguins.
It is Penguin Awareness Day, everybody. So it has a name. It's a jocular name, obviously. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual code in it. It's not black and white or anything.
Penguin publishers have been posting
collecting GIFs all day.
Have they really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whenever we go to a search conference, they'll give us like stuffed penguins or stuffed pandas.
Oh, how funny.
Know. It's kind of handy that it's not like named, you know, by number or something like that. So.
I know you're not directly involved with it, but do you have some sense of what changes might happen with Penguin?
Penguin actually came directly out of web spam. Overall search quality. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Okay. Penguin came directly out of web spam.
Well, all the SEOs are listening, Matt.
And so it tries to improve quality of content on the web.
Where have I heard that before?
Yeah. But the nice thing is there are people at Google who are always listening to feedback.
Yeah.
And
we don't have to listen real hard, because if somebody's ranking goes from second to fifth, you're going to hear it.
You hear about it.
You hear about it.
Absolutely.
Do they come to your home? Okay, you don't have to. No, don't say anything. You'd be smart. You'd be wise to avoid that conversation.
Yeah.
You're smiling at this event, though. You're very happy. You're having a good time. I'm looking at the video. Matt's
quality launch meeting.
Matt's rubbing. Wait a minute. Go back a little bit, because show the video, because not only is he smiling, but in a little bit, I think I can imagine what's going through your head here as he rubs his beard. I wonder if I should. Should I grow a beard, maybe?
I should grow a beard.
Grow a beard.
I wonder how I'd look with a beard.
Thinking about that
would be cool.
Right now.
I have the best chin. Maybe a beard would make that better.
This was 4 years ago, so the beard was just a twinkle in your eye at this time. Okay, let's talk about something else. Enough about Penguin. I think I'm never going to get anything out of you anyway, so it's just as well.
Folks are working hard to make things better all the time.
Yeah.
That's the main thing to know.
Yeah, and I think that's actually really cool, this kind of, that's your business. It's like Coke never changes the secret recipe, but Google has to constantly, adjust the secret recipe.
Right, well, and the web changes, so you have to adapt to that as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not merely to improve your algorithm. It's actually to respond to things that have changed.
Oh, yeah. People care more about freshness and breaking news now, for example. So you got to respond to those kinds of things.
I am not going to, and Engadget has a headline, which I would not really support, Google's creepy plan to kill the password. However, they are talking about something called Project Abacus, which I think is fascinating. Your phone would generate a trust score as it monitors location patterns, voice and speech patterns, how you walk, how you type, images that come in through the camera. And if you think about it, it doesn't take a whole lot of data points to be a unique fingerprint. Better than a fingerprint. You.
But that means like I go to the wrong part of town and injure myself, and suddenly my phone stops working. I can't call for help. You know, there's a challenge with a lot of these pattern matching things, is that they're trying really hard to fit you into a box, and that you still need an escape from the box. And that's often a problem with this.
I'm not sure why Violet Blue's writing about this, because I mean, this was announced at Google I/O last year, right? This was part of the ATAP presentation. Or maybe we're getting close to this. I don't know.
Maybe there's more of it. Maybe more of it's coming out soon.
Yeah.
Maybe that's.
I have seen a few stories on it. So I don't think I don't know if it's a bad idea. I think it's a very interesting idea. I mean, really, the problem of authentication is a very difficult problem, and a very important problem. It's really passwords. It's clear are the worst way to solve it. And that's
they're so broken.
They're broken, and it's a new thing, because I never really thought about this, but somebody said something. Until recently, the only thing you had to remember is maybe your phone number and your locker combination. Mm-hmm. And now we've got to remember, if we're doing it right, unique passwords for hundreds of different sites and computers and stuff. And of course, nobody can do that. So the incentive is to write it down, put it on a Post-it note. Come up with some, or use the same password all the time, which is what I think almost everybody does.
And is really dangerous, too.
Right. We use password managers. Any people who watch these shows, I'm sure, are all using password managers. But you know, recently, we talked about it yesterday on Security Now, somebody, a security researcher, showed how easy it would be to phish LastPass's, not merely LastPass's password login, but their second factor. In fact, it's easier if you're using two-factor with LastPass. And, oh, what are you using? A YubiKey.
Yes, Google calls it a security key, but basically it makes you less susceptible to phishing. And the nice thing about this is, you know, when you need to authenticate, you just insert this USB in and you press the button. And so somebody physically needs to be there. But it also relies on a hash of the domain name. So you can't get phished because – or you can't really be phished because it only this will only authenticate to a valid Google.com domain. For example, and it's an open standard FIDO UDF. You can look it all up, but
that's FIDO. That's a FIDO device.
Yeah. So if you've got passwords here, two-factor authentication is here, security keys are up here, and you know, you have to spend a little bit of money to get one, but it makes you so much less likely to get hacked.
I worry about losing the key, though.
Yeah, I think you can always fall back on, you know, right, things like passwords and, you know, texts to your phone and stuff like that, but. But I really feel like you're a lot more secure if you're willing to take that extra step.
Is FIDO about two-factor? Is it essentially a second factor? Or,
As I understand it, yes. It's sort of a framework that lets you do, you know, this sort of authentication, right, as I understand. I'm not 100% sure.
And Kevin Marks, you pointed in the chat room to a site called Will Someone that uses email authentication.
Yeah, now this is a site that a friend of mine put together, and this uses email authentication, but it doesn't make you create a password. So when you do that, you send it, you put your email in, it sends you an email, and you click through on the email, and that's it. You're then in. I'm starting to see other sites do this.
Does it set a cookie in the browser? How does it do that?
It sets a cookie in the browser once you are logged in. Yes.
See, that's not a great solution. For security, Facebook does the same thing. Once you authenticate with Facebook, so
it sends the unique ID to your email, a link. You click on that link, and then you go there, and then there's a cookie set, which everything else does as well. Every time you sign in, a cookie is set.
Right. But as we saw with FireSheep, if there's a flaw in a browser or if you're not using HTTPS, that cookie can be vulnerable.
Right. But it's less vulnerable than a phishable password. Yeah, this is a hard problem. I'm not saying this is trivial.
No, it's very hard. Let me see. I just got the email from Will Someone. Can I show the email, or is that going to have something?
It's a one shot link, so you can show it after you've clicked it.
Okay. So it says, "Hi, Will Someone provides individual communities a better way to ask for help." Oh, that's cool. Click this link below to create your account. A lot of people do this, but it's never going to ask me for a password again. So it's a non-expiring cookie?
No, the cookie will expire. But if it expires, then you have to log in again.
You do it again.
We'll create you a new one of the things.
Okay.
And it also lets you log in with Google, which is the other way around this, because then you're just delegating the problem to Google, which they've put more effort into it than little startup can do.
And that's OAuth, right? Is that OAuth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, if you're using Google's OAuth, you're basically using cookies too. There's no, you know,
yeah.
It's just that
anything persistent would have to be cookie based.
Although I mourn for Mozilla, which had something called Persona, and I think they're in the process of shutting that down. But it sort of had the idea of baking identity and authentication into the browser, which I think is pretty clever because, you know, if people use a common browser, whether it's Firefox or Chrome or something like that, if that could handle more of the authentication where you don't have to remember the passwords quite as much, I think that would be nice. Yeah. But it seems like the pendulum is swinging away from that rather than towards it, which is a shame.
Our friend Steve Gibson has a solution that he's hoping will gain some traction called Squirrel. And I think if it came from Google or Microsoft, it might have a shot, unfortunately, because it's, you know, just an individual doing it. Although he's got a pretty good community going on around it. It's using a QR code I don't really understand. He's explained it to me like 1,000 times. I don't understand it. But it has some advantages because it's so quick to sign in. For instance, you could ask somebody to sign in every time. And so you wouldn't have to store a cookie. You could have, active authentication every time. I know my bank, for instance, is never going to set a cookie that just makes me lets me log in anytime I want. That would be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you want, if you have a site that needs to be secure, you're going to have login each and every time, preferably with a second factor. Mm-hmm. Such a hard problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a shame.
It is a shame.
Well, I mean, so this is one of our, indie web answers to this, which is called IndieAuth. And the idea there is we're basically using the large sites that have put the effort into authentication to authenticate our own sites. So we do that by linking, you link from your own site to one of these silos. And then from that silo, you link back to your site. So you've got a two-directional link.
This works great if you have a website that you can
Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, you need to have a website though that you could put these rel links in and all of that.
Yeah, so that's one of these models.
And I use this, by the way, because I'm on with known. That was easy to do, and I modified the HTML in a variety of different places, and so I can use IndieAuth, and I have, and it works really great. In fact, I think I've used it on the show and gave out my my cell phone number at the moment. Because you can also use SMS authentication. I like SMS authentication. Is it what's wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that?
Well, the
big
sigh
from
Matt
Cutts.
Yeah, the carriers aren't always good at protecting you from getting hacked, and it's possible to spoof, you know, phone numbers from time to time whenever you call in to get voicemail. So the caller ID can be spoofable. So I'm not sure I would trust my authentication to Verizon or AT&T, something like that.
So in the early days of PayPal, I had a PayPal football. You press a button, it was the same thing, right? It was an authenticator, just like Google Authenticator. It would generate a 6-digit code based on time plus secret. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what your FIDO does?
Yes. So Google Authenticator and those kinds of standards usually use a secret hash and a time code.
Right.
So that way you don't even need to have a net connection, which is very, very handy. Right. I think the FIDO stuff, it puts the secret key the secret key is actually on this guy.
It's on that. Right.
Yeah.
Can it be read? Could it be stolen from that? No, it must be encrypted.
I think it's encrypted. Somehow. I'm not 100% sure.
That's
but
interesting.
I think it's,
yeah.
Well, that's the question. It's like, it depends. If you plug that into another thing and then plug that through, you could probably do a man in the middle on it to some extent. So,
I don't think so. I think they encrypt
But you still need physical possession of it. So, yeah.
Right.
Darlene Love's mad at you.
Sorry.
She sang a song called It's a Marshmallow World. Who doesn't love that song? Apparently somebody at Google loves it a lot because it was used in the ad for Nexus phones. You've seen the ad. I love the ad. Did Google not, the ad company, which is 72 and Sunny, did not ask her permission?
The article is a little strange.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's not a copyright thing, but that it's...
It embodied Love's identity through the copying of her voice. In other words, they used... an impersonator.
Oh, so they made a cover for it.
They made a cover.
So she gets the songwriting thing, but she doesn't get the recording sync fee. Right.
Because she didn't write the song, so presumably the publishing rights were paid.
Oh, okay.
But the performance rights maybe weren't paid. Here, you can play it. It's okay. She can sue me, too. I'd love to meet Darlene Love. Does sound like her, doesn't it?
It might be, and they might have tried to get the rights. There's some interesting things here where they claim there's a dispute between she and Phil Spector or something. The question will arise to what rights Love retained or gave up when working with Phil Spector on It's a Marshmallow World.
So there's, it's complicated.
It's difficult. Yeah.
As with all of these things.
This is like the Jonathan Coulton one in Glee, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he just said, screw. I mean, what did he end up doing? I remember I talked to him about it, and I forgot.
He ended up releasing his version of it.
That's right.
And then telling people to send him money for it or something. But basically, so he covered I Like Big Butts as a folk singer, and then Glee basically completely recreated his his pacing.
We played him side by side when I was interviewing Jonathan, probably on Triangulation, and it was clearly a copy.
Yeah.
But I then talked to somebody who works in the music acquisition department of Glee. I think I could say this now because Glee is now gone, right? He said, oh, we never got rights. We just do it and then wait for the letter and then pay them if they send us a letter.
But the thing is, you know, normally, you know, Glee is normally recording covers,
right?
Which you are allowed to do. That's actually one of the things. Where
you don't
have
to pay for a cover. I know you don't. I know Weird Al doesn't have to pay for parodies.
No, you don't have to pay to record a cover because there's a statutory thing. So you have to pay, but what you pay is a statutory thing.
You pay the publisher publishing rights.
You pay the publishing rights, but you don't pay the recording artists. You pay the
performance
writers,
right?
Rangers and so on.
Yeah.
And so Glee by re-recording songs is totally in the clear from that front, but it's a bit weird if they're actually not doing an original performance, but actually doing a sort of clone performance. And that gets a bit odd because then, you know, the argument is they're cloning his arrangement, but that's harder to do. And it's a mess. Basically, all this copyright stuff is a horrible mess. And they're basically being a bit sketchy. It wouldn't have hurt them much to have sort of thanked him and invited him on the show or something.
I agree.
Yeah, that would seem like
give him some Glee merch.
Oh, dude, have him come on the show and perform. That's the thing that Glee could do for artists is give them, you know,
would be nice
exposure to a larger audience. Yeah. So that's a natural thing for them to do. That makes sense.
So a lot of people in our chat room have been talking about Tap 10. This is something Google's doing for Android pay users. Has anybody in the chat room been paid? Have you received your free music?
They talked a little bit about it last night on All About Android.
Yeah.
And it's rolling out very
slowly.
It's
a small program currently being tested with a limited set of users, according to Google.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you use your Google Pay?
Yeah, when you use Android Pay.
Oh, sorry, Android Pay.
It gives you a like a opt-in screen.
When you pay 10 times with Android Pay, then you get something.
Yeah, they talked about it at the break. They broke it down last night. Like, you get a free song on the first purchase.
Okay.
On the third, you get another free song.
Okay.
And then after 10, you get a free Chromecast.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's a deal.
$35 value.
I love my Chromecast.
Yeah.
I actually have extras. Because I just kept buying them. They're so cheap. I just kept buying them. I realized, I don't have that many TVs. I did the same thing with Chromecast Audio. I've put Chromecast Audio on every possible powered speaker I could find. And I have a couple left over.
That's great.
Because I love it. It's wonderful. Who doesn't? It's so great. And it's inexpensive. I think I bought it when there was some deal going on or something like that.
There's a Netflix month thing that...
Yeah, that's right. I think I have 12 years of Netflix free.
Except that you couldn't queue them up or something, so I'm not sure I actually managed to claim all the ones that I got from it. But it also came with like credit on Google Play. So the original one was a huge deal because you paid $35 and got like almost that much credit straight away.
Yeah,
that's probably they stopped doing that because they realized it was already a good deal. But.
Yeah, they don't need to encourage it. And then there's one with Google Survey that chat room's been doing a lot of surveys lately, which means your results. I'm sorry, Matt. They're suck.
No, it's actually there's. So I love the Google Consumer Survey team because it's another way to monetize for publishers. Like instead of a paywall, it's like answer this one survey question, and you can earn app credit by answering questions.
Right.
So, which is great, except, of course, then you have abuse where you have people who are like, I'm just going to always click A real fast and I'm going to earn, you know, $3, which I can spend
on. But they only let you do a one a day now or something like that.
Well they have some fake questions.
Oh.
They're like, what is your favorite song by ABBA or whatever? And one of the songs will be completely fake.
Oh.
And so anybody who just answers something that's 100% wrong, he's just clicking A all the time.
So this is this is Google Opinion Rewards. Is that it?
That's what I use.
That's what you use? And then what letter do you tap all the time? Okay, I'm just kidding. I'm sure you answer all the questions. No, I got it here. I just downloaded it. I want because I can get free. You get free Google Play credit, right? Yeah, you can see all the history. You've done a lot of them. Look at that! Holy cow! So you can do more than one a day. You've already done four. What are we paying you for, Jason? You've done four today.
They're literally like 30 cents.
Are you doing this now while we're...
Okay. Yeah, 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 while we're switching. That's why my switches are a little delayed.
He's a hardworking guy.
Hey. He's earned $61.95.
Yeah, but that's when that started. Give me some credit. It's been like 3 years or 2 years.
Oh, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Been a long time.
Yeah, but I pay for a lot of apps with that.
I'm going to do this.
The only thing is it does get a little creepy at times because it'll be like, so did you go to Safeway yesterday? I'm like, yes. Which I think, and Matt, you can answer this question. Does this help with the Google Maps? Like tracking data?
They can't tie into that.
That's a good question. I don't know if they had it. Permission to do that would be a pretty brilliant thing to do.
Let me see what permissions I'm at. You know,
if you go into history on Google, it'll tell you where you've been.
No, but they can't do it without permission.
Right.
Google will use the responses to this survey to send you relevant surveys from researchers. Responses to these surveys, this is the test survey, are not connected to your Google profile, but a record of your participation is kept to credit your Google Play balance. I understand, I said. Please continue. What is your gender? What is your age? Too old for this survey. My zipper is 94952. So they have some information about, do I live in an urban, suburban, or rural area? I think this is suburban. No, I'm not going to answer that question.
It's which part of town you're in. Yeah.
Enter my occupation. You know what? I want to thank them. Because usually there's a drop down, and I'm none of the above, right, Matt? What do you put in there? Google engineer.
Wait, it has podcaster in the list.
It doesn't. Although it says, for example, software engineer. So you could just say, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I should say podcaster. Let's see. Oh, look, legislator, lodging manager, or farm labor contractor. I see. No, it doesn't have podcaster. Promotions. Well, but I can fill it in. I think I could. It lets me. It's free form. It'll let me free form here. Oops. Oh, well. thinks I'm a pod.
Thinks you're a pod?
A pod. I hate it when that happens.
I'm a pod.
I'm a pod person. You saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers? That's me. Yeah, that was me. That was my work. So then I can answer a survey and earn some credit. That's cool.
Yeah, so no surveys available right now? Yeah.
Survey tutorial.
Ooh.
Yeah, because it's so hard to answer questions. In general, do you approve or disapprove of the efforts of the United Nations? Wait a minute.
Hey.
Sometimes symbols are associated with a particular idea or concept. What is the symbol below? This must be the anti-spam thing. What is the symbol below associated with? Yin and yang.
No. Yeah, you don't want... robots.
Which of the following are continents? This is hard.
Yeah.
None of the above are continents. Now, is this... That's an intelligence test. China, France, Egypt, Mexico,
general
New Zealand.
Test, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, knowledge or culture. I think
it's
Google Opinion
about
Rewards
the United Nations again.
Is...
Twice it asked me about the United Nations. Suppose you had an opportunity to have a message you created right in front of your government officials. What? Suppose you had an opportunity to have a message you created read in front of your government officials. In a few words, what would you say?
Campaign finance reform.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Wait a minute. I want to enter it. Klaatu Barada Nikto. Let's see. Doesn't that end the end of the world? Yeah. Hey, it knows Klaatu Barada Nikto. Holy cow, it speaks... Whatever, Robbie the Robot.
Voice recognition, yeah.
Wow, it knows, it spelled Klaatu right. Oh, it's still talking, I'm sorry. In some countries, a president is head of the government. In others, it is the prime minister. To show you are still paying attention. Please select 5 stars. Is this unintentionally humorous or they knew?
I think they knew. I think these are the questions to make sure that people aren't just faking it, you know, signing up for new accounts over
that
and over.
That is awesome. Yeah. I don't feel like a robot anymore. Wow. Thank you, Google Opinion Rewards.
Click the green check mark. New survey available.
New survey available.
There you go.
What does this icon look like to you? Okay, I know where this is coming from. So this is some designer paid for this or some company paid for this or maybe even Google would like to know what the hell does that mean? It's a timer, right?
So you can do your own survey at Google Consumer Surveys. You can make your own survey.
Do you pay for it a little bit?
Look at that.
Whoa! I got a buck for that.
Best dollar you ever earned.
And never going to see that again, am I? That's like when you do a Bitcoin miner and you get a Bitcoin. It's like, that's the last time you ever going to see a Bitcoin.
You can buy a song.
I got a whole buck. Share this with your friends.
Woohoo!
I do like this new ability built into Search to install apps directly from search results. I think that's pretty cool. If you have to be on an Android mobile to do that, right?
I think so. And well, you wouldn't have to. The Play Store knows to install.
I know. Apps, so. I install it from the Play Store all the time. I think that's like one of the best things about Android.
Yeah. Maybe they'll start with that. Start with mobile.
Yeah. I think it's rolling this. Another one of those. It's rolling it out. They fixed the stuck pen on the Galaxy S5. A little too late for some of us.
Who are you looking around for, Leo?
Ron Amadio.
Yeah, Ron Amadio. That's who screwed it up. As everybody knows, I stuck mine in the wrong way. And I paid the price. But now there will be the first fix was to put a warning sticker on the screen, which probably caused more pens to be stuck in wrong than anything else.
As people experiment with the thing.
Don't stick it in the wrong way. Oh, really? What happens? Let me see. Oh. Because I know I did that. So now something's going on. They've put a flexible plastic cover over the little switch that breaks, and it gives it a ramp, so it pushes. Anyway, it's a simple fix, but they also say the cover is now attached with adhesive tape. I don't know. Nice fix, Samsung. Samsung hasn't said it will be offering this fix to existing customers, so if you have, don't think that this fix is retroactive. If you have a Note 5, do not stick your pen in wrong. It's not retroactive.
Be careful.
Oh, I'm disappointed. Speaking of Google Cast, Denon apparently there. Stop it! Somebody's showing a video of somebody sticking him wrong. Apparently, Denon and Google had a partnership, and at that time, it was said that Denon would support Google Cast in some speakers. I'd like to see it in Denon. I would actually actively buy AR receivers that had Cast built in. Mm-hmm. But nobody's done that. Not that it's so hard to. In fact, I have a few extras, as you know, lying around. Stick a Cast in it. But anyway, Denon has never done anything with that, which is disappointing. Cast partners announced in January at CES include B&O, Play, Harman Kardon, Onkyo, Philips, Pioneer, and Romfeld. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap this up? I was loving it.
We started talking about Brave and then forgot to finish the conversation.
Brave.
So Brave is a new browser from Brendan Eich and a bunch of other people. And it fits into the ad blocking conversation because
it doesn't because it sticks its own ads in.
Well, sure.
Well, that's the same. Well, sure.
It's the same as AMP does. You know, AMP blocks ads and they put other ads in.
Most ad blockers don't stick ads in place of the other
actually,
ads.
They do. Have you not been following this?
Wait a minute. Well, I'm using uBlock Origin, which does not.
Okay, but a lot of the ad blockers now actually either take money to whitelist certain ads.
That I know. That's fine. We actually interviewed on Triangulation the guys behind AdBlock Plus, which has this approved advertiser list. Google's on it, by the way. They say it's not that we take money for this. Like, you can't pay to be on the list. You have to be. You have to fit our guidelines, and we do ask for money because that defrays the costs of it. That's how we do make the software. But you could make it that way.
Yeah, but you know, so it's another iteration of that same idea, basically. So, but it was it's But they also said we're making a browser. But if you actually look at their open source stuff, it's they've forked three different browsers on three different platforms, yeah, which is also a bit strange. So yeah, interesting idea, but yeah, monitor and see where it goes.
So it's right now it's on GitHub.
Yes, right now there's three GitHub projects, and they've forked Linkbubble on Android, and they've forked some Chromium Vera on iOS, and they've forked something else for the desktop.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's three separate browser projects they've decided for three different platforms. So it's not a new browser; it's a set of forks of existing browsers. So it's a biz model fork to some extent.
Brendan Eich was, of course, ran the Mozilla project before he left.
Yes.
HTTPS everywhere is built in, which I like. That's good.
So it's explicitly saying, what if we made a browser that worked better because it was taking ads out of everything?
AdBlock Plus makes a browser for Android that does that.
Right. And Apple's hooks potentially do that on iOS.
Yeah, you have to download a blocker, but you can do that. Firefox, I didn't realize this, but Firefox support on mobile supports Firefox extensions. So you could put an ad blocker in Firefox on mobile.
Right. But very few people run Firefox on mobile. That's true. Yeah, I think Firefox on mobile is one of the things they forked.
Yeah.
That's their iOS thing, I think.
So it also blocks tracking pixels and tracking cookies, which... Now, I have to say one thing that I understand that there are multiple reasons why people use ad blockers. One is just ads are annoying, and I understand that. Another is for security reasons. In fact, what was the website?
Forbes.
you know this. Forbes has been one of many websites that say, oh, I see you're running an ad blocker. Would you mind turning that off? Because that's how we support ourselves. And if you did... You would get malware promotions. I don't know if you'd actually get the malware, but you got a pop under that encouraged you to download malware.
Right.
Which is why another reason why people run ad blockers, they also run ad blockers for privacy reasons because they worry about tracking. But one of the side effects of that is that things like Google Analytics are often broken by ad blockers as well, which means... A publisher like me, for instance, I can't even get metrics of people who come to my site using an ad blocker just are invisible to me. I don't even know they're there. And it looks like this does that as well. It's hard to say.
It's still early days.
Yeah, I think, you know, you would have to block JavaScript if you were going to block Google Analytics, I think, or some kinds of JavaScript.
Well, no, because it's a well-known domain, so you can block well-known domains.
You can just
if you're
block
the browser,
it.
You're in control of everything.
Yeah, Brave blocks tracking pixels and tracking cookies. I guess that's fine. I mean, I always turn on block third-party cookies, only accept cookies from sites you visit.
Which is basically what they mean. I mean, but the challenge there is if you are... You know, it will also block some other things that you may want, but mostly it'll get rid of those. The thing is, if you have an iframe on the site that is giving you some kind of here's information, you know, here's comments on Facebook or something, then that may get blocked by it too.
But it's
part of the same conversation about the sort of super invasiveness of ad tech and the fight back, and I think that this fits in with that. But I'm not necessarily sure it's going to be a great success, but it's interesting, you know, looking that they've got Brendan and Jan and some people who I've got technical respect for behind it is interesting.
So the one story that I thought was kind of interesting we didn't mention was Link NYC, which is the sort of really fast gigabit Wi-Fi in New York,
where
they're replacing
jealous.
The telephones. Yeah, since Jeff and Gina aren't on, I'll like represent for New York and be like, somebody said she wanted to set up her office by this bus stop at 17th and somewhere because it was like six times faster Wi-Fi. You know, apparently they run fiber to these former telephone booths, and it's
Devinder Hardawar wrote on Engadget that he was getting. I think 230 megabits down and something like 300 megabits up.
Oh, man.
Where do I get that? I'll sign up. That's your Google Fiber, but you have to sit next to a phone booth in New York City to get it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so this is, I was in New York last week and I missed that. And I was struck by something. So I wrote a blog post about this. So I'll give you the argument for my blog post. I just checked the blog post into the thing. But The frustrating thing about New York is that when you go on the subway, you lose connectivity. And there's an ongoing project to try and get Wi-Fi and stuff on the subway, but it's hard because you've got to like put transmitters on the ground and things. And if they do it, they'd likely only be in stations and not in the tunnels and so on.
Right.
At the same time, New York is spending a fortune to try and refit the subway to work out where their trains are, because actually the way that the train tracking works is the train shorts out between the two tracks, and they have the different sections of the track subdivided into blocks, and they can tell that there's a train in that section, but that's basically all they can tell in the central system. And this is fantastic, like early 20th century technology. There's a great article about it that I linked to on The Atlantic that explains this, and it was fascinating.
The pictures of the switching stations with their 19th century technology is really amazing.
That's a wonderful essay. I recommend you all read it. But the thing that struck me as I was sitting on the subway going, why the hell does my phone not able to give me transit directions when I'm offline, which is my rant to Google Maps, is that Google's missing a huge trick here. Now, Google already knows how to track people when they're driving or cycling or walking. And it can tell what you're doing. It will also sum over all the people in cars to get freeway traffic. But it's really bad at understanding that you're on a bus or a train, which should be if you've got connectivity, it's the same problem. It's, am I moving at a certain speed in a certain path? Oh, are there another 20 people who are experiencing identical accelerations nearby? Well, you're probably on a train or a bus. So it's something that you could certainly solve from Google Maps' point of view, is which bus are you on, which train are you on? But also, this would actually solve the problem for the transit company, which is, where is that bus? Where is that train? Because, oh, look, we've just put 30 people to track the bus for us. So I'm puzzled that this hasn't happened. And I know it's one of these like political will things. But there's a process here, which is, first, Google actually applies its smart tracking technology to work out where buses and trains are, which is, I know it's doable. But they just haven't thought of it, because most of the engineers on Maps are in Mountain View and don't use public transit much. But the other half of this that was the real breakthrough thought was, well, Google should actually pitch for the NYC subway contract for Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Because that's suddenly they've got a whole bunch of users who are captive users for Wi-Fi. Well, wouldn't that be great? But also they would actually solve the where are the trains and where are the problems and actually close that loop. Anyway, this is my free idea for Google.
I don't know if Link NYC is a private enterprise, or I think this was an initiative by Mayor de Blasio. I'm not sure, but there are no ads. You don't get any. It is obviously a captive portal, but you don't get ads. Apparently, the ads that sponsored are only on the screen at the phone booth. And the other thing,
that's the right way to do this, Scott. So when I was at BT, I wrote a pitch up for this for BT, because it's like, hey, we have all these phone boxes in the streets. We should turn them into Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's kind of interesting, but no, it's kind of hard. It is hard. And I wasn't able to get it through politically. But it's an obvious thing to do. It's like they've actually built cables to points in the street. Yeah. People no longer need to pick them up and put money into phones on it. Yeah. But making them Wi-Fi base stations is a great idea, and they're very well correlated.
Can they use some? I mean, obviously they're using the hole in the ground, but can they use other existing infrastructure, like the phone wires? I mean,
depends. Yeah, I mean, if you're the phone company, you can, because
you own the copper.
That's DSL. You own the copper.
This is faster than DSL, though, I gotta say.
But you also have the right to rerun conduit for the phone company. That's one of the easements you get for being phone.
Okay.
So there's a natural correlation between the two there.
But I have a friend who actually bought from AT&T the rights to all the phone booths, because AT&T, the money they were making on phone booths was de minimis, so they didn't care. He got it for a song. He continues to run them because there are places, lots of places, where people need phone booths. And in almost every case, it's cell infrastructure now. They don't bother with trying to put them on a landline. It's just a cell. It's just a little cell site. And and more than that, he says the real challenge of the business is a logistics problem: collecting the coins. that's where the brain power goes. Is how do we get the coins affordably and efficiently out of the box? Because you got to do that, and you kind of. So he's apparently got some sort of technology that weighs the thing. And they've now applied this to the Nestle's freezers. He expanded the business. He says, we're good at this. What else can we apply this knowledge to? Oh, you know those freezers in the 7-Eleven or whatever where you buy ice cream treats? Well, that's turns out a similar logistics issue is to restock those in an efficient way. And so now they actually have little scales, probably little MEMS scales on the feet of these things, so they know when they have to be restocked because they weigh less. Anyway, I want to say one good thing about Link NYC. They're doing the security right. And Devendra pointed this out. When you connect with it, you get a private key that's unique to you. You add that private key to your device. And so, as I understand it, in effect, you are privately connected to this network. So it doesn't have some of the other problems that public Wi-Fi are prone to, which is great.
Interesting.
And Leo, there's one other nice feature, which is called Passpoint, which apparently lets you connect to the Wi-Fi without clicking the I agree to abide by your terms and conditions.
I think that's why you get the cert, right? You're getting a cert. Okay. And then it's like a SSH login. They have
That's a good idea. Because that is the giant nightmare of public Wi-Fi is that they put captive portals up.
Horrible.
And particularly with transit ones, it's like, well, I'm trying to pass through this station. I don't have time to stop and go through your captive portal nonsense.
Yeah.
So if you can actually do that and roam across the city, that's a good idea.
Yeah, this is
The idea of like the advertising is not on the Wi-Fi but on the Wi-Fi base station is also a very smart idea.
Makes people happy.
Because you really don't want to mess with their connection and inject nonsense into it. Exactly. Whereas if you've got a physical point of presence, that's a sensible way to support it.
Makes me want to move to New York City. That's the other side benefit of that. Mm-hmm. I want to wrap this up. We're going way long, and I just have to hurry up. Moving. Nothing more really critical that we need to say. There's a lot of stories this week. There's a huge number, and I'm sure that you all have read them in great detail. So, all right.
Nothing too crazy.
Nothing crazy. All right. Practical telepathy was invented in 2007.
That's an article. This is a great article by
Charlie Strauss
this week.
Yeah.
So he's basically talking about politics and the weird state of politics. And his comment on practical telepathy is basically because we have Twitter and Facebook and all these social media with always connected devices, in effect, we're all sharing our thoughts with everyone all the time.
Right.
And this has transformed the way
politics works. It's certainly transformed politics, yes.
Yeah. So it's a good. I recommend reading the essay and the comments are fairly good too.
Charlie's very smart. Is he now unaffiliated? Wasn't he at the Times? Or was he at the Mercury? I can't remember.
No. Charlie Strauss is a science fiction author. He writes...
Oh, he's a science fiction author. Yeah. I'm thinking of his brother, Randall.
Yes.
Are they brothers?
Are they? I don't know. I made that up.
He's making it up.
No, they might be. I don't know.
Randall Strauss, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, except I think Charlie Strauss is like Scottish or something?
Yes, he's English but lives in Scotland, yes.
Okay. So...
would be Scottish if they split.
Okay, as long as we're talking science fiction authors and, by the way, who seem to understand all of this much better than you and I do, I should mention that the dialogue, let me see if I can get my pocket up because I made a copy of it. The dialogue between, I can't, where is my pocket app? Where are you, my pocket app? Open pocket.
Okay, Google.
Okay, Google. Open pocket. It did. Thank you, but that's not where I need it. It did. It totally did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was on the floor.
Go voice recognition.
It was on the floor and it did it. Bruce Sterling apparently does this on a regular basis every year on The Well, of all places. Has a dialogue.
I love that.
Have you read this?
I haven't read this year's one.
Yeah.
It was out.
I added it to my pocket because you really kind of basically have to scroll through The Well to read it, which is not a non-trivial thing to do. But with John Lepkowski, apparently they do this every year. They talk in Courier Sans. New Courier. They talk about the state of the world. It's a really great dialogue. I've only about a little way into it, but just some great stuff here. All right, let's wrap it up. We got to wrap it up. I got one more ad, and then if you want picks or tips or anything you want to share, Matt, I'd love to know what your 30-day challenge is these days, that kind of okay. thing. But first, a reminder, your challenge, my friends, to take those old gadgets and recycle them intelligently, responsibly with Gazelle.com. Don't throw them in the drawer, because that would be like throwing $100 bills in the drawer. I mean, you don't want to throw money away. And don't just throw them in the landfill. That would be worse. What you do is you go to Gazelle.com. You can get a quote right now on your old iPhone, your old Samsung, a lot of different gadgets, smartphones, tablets, tablets from all sorts of manufacturers, including your old Microsoft Surface if you got a new one, Apple Macs. They will give you a quote that's guaranteed for 30 days. You're locked in. So you can take advantage of that anytime in the 30 days, which means you get plenty of time to get a new device, to move the data over and all of that. As we get closer to Mobile World Congress, this might be the time to go to Gazelle and get a quote for your old phone. $30 for my Surface RT. Hey, you know what? That's more than I expected. That ain't bad. That ain't bad. Gazelle gives you top dollar. They also sell devices, pre-owned devices. And that's a great deal if you're looking to replace a broken phone or get a phone for the kids. You could get a phone that's gently used, but in every case works perfectly. They put it through a very rigorous 30-point inspection. And you have 30 days to return it if you don't like it. So it is a good deal if you're buying an iPhone 4S through 6 Plus or an iPad Air standard mini models or a Samsung Galaxy phone. Check it out on Gazelle. Pre-owned devices. It's the place to sell and buy. Give new life to used electronics at Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com today. All right, let's start with Mr. Matt Cutts. What's your 30-day challenge these days?
My 30-day challenge is to actually kind of slots with the Gazelle thing. It's to get rid of one thing per day. Because January is a great time to clean house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can start a pile for Goodwill of, like, magazine holders and stuff like that. You can sell it away. You can give it away. USB things. Here's this great cap. Make the web great again, like Donald Trump. Except, you know, it's...
I like that. Are you giving that away? I'll take it.
I'll send it to you.
No, that's all right. That's okay.
So I'm just trying to get rid of one thing every day. And it's actually kind of nice because it forces you to re-examine the sort of stuff that you're doing. But I do have one quick tip as well,
good.
Which is the Google Dance is back. So we used to have something where we'd switch out our algorithm and have a new index, and we only had enough time to roll out one data center per day. And so every night we'd take one data center out of the rotation, update it, and then the rankings would be different at that data center, and it would take about a week. So depending on which data center you'd hit, you'd get different rankings, and people would call that the Google Dance. Well, what we decided to do is actually have a dance at Google called the Google Dance. And we stopped in like 2006 or something like that, or 2008.
It's an actual dance?
It's an actual dance. And so... So people called it the Google Dance, and we're like, well, let's have a dance.
We have a
T-shirt about the Google Dance. And so there's a conference called SMX West, which means West Coast. And they're going to have like 500 or so of the attendees who can sign up to attend the Google Dance. And I'm hoping to be there myself. It should be a lot of fun.
Oh, that is exciting. And Danny Sullivan will be there doing the white man's overbite.
Yes, it's his conference, and so
that sounds awesome.
Should be fun.
So if you have not yet bought tickets to SMX West, go right now to searchengineland.com and sign up. You could be in the Google Dance. All the boys on the left, all the girls on the right, just stare at each other across the hall. It'll be fun.
Just like seventh grade.
Actually, you know what? Now, as you grow up, nerds love to dance. I've found that. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Matt Cutts. Appreciate
Absolutely.
That. Mr. Kevin Marks, a tip, a trick, like fill us in on IndieWeb.
Well, IndieWeb Camp New York is happening this weekend.
Good.
So if you're in New York and want to spend the weekend working on your own website or building IndieWeb stuff for others, that's this weekend. I'll put the link in the chat. It's on the front page of IndieWebCamp.com. And, of course, we have Homebrew Website Club next Wednesday. Not tonight, but a week from tonight, in various cities around the world.
Love it.
Which should be in there as well. And there's more indie webcams coming up in the new year. There's one at MIT in March, and there's various others that I've forgotten, but there's four or five already booked.
I love it. You guys are fighting the good fight for web standards and the independent web, and it needs to be fought. IndieWebCamp.com if people want to learn more.
And also, one of the IndieWeb specs has been published as a first public working draft by the W3C Social Web Standards Group. WebMention, so that's been published. So WebMention is the way that a site can tell another site that you've linked, that it's been linked to. There's a first draft for that W3C now. So
kind of like TrackBack.
It's kind of like TrackBack, but it's done over HTTP. And there's some wrinkles to it to make it like, so it's done as an HTTP post rather than done as a XML RPC call and so on. So that's been published, and MicroPub is in the stages of about to be published. I think that may come out in the next week or so as well. So MicroPub is a general API for letting you post your site from another site, and that's another part of the sort of indie web sort of protocol collection. So both of those are working to try and get those as web standards as part of the W3C. There's that social working group there has a bunch of other protocols that and things being discussed too. But those two are the sort of directly indie web derived ones.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin Marks. A little tip for me, it might seem like a contradiction in terms, but now you can use Facebook anonymously. What a thought. Facebook, which has had a Tor address for some time, now has made it easy for you to do it on your Android device. You'll need Orbot, which is a Tor for Android. You download it, install it, point it to, what is the Facebook Tor address? I can't even remember. Is it? I can't remember. But you know what? You could figure it out. Yeah, of course not, because I'm not on Tor right now. But if I were, I'd be there by now. For some reason, I want to say Facebook.name, but that can't be right. Facebook.tor, maybe? I can't remember what it is. But the Facebook is now allowing you to use it through a Tor, which is kind of wild. It's Facebook Core www.i.onion. That's it. Facebook Core www.i.onion. And the idea, really, they say, is for countries where Facebook is blocked, it would be dangerous to use Facebook, you can now use it anonymously, which is, I think, pretty interesting and fairly cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. Facebook Core, www.onion, but you'll need Torbot on your Android. Thanks, everybody. Hey, thank you, Matt Cutts.
It's not actually anonymous.
It's not anonymous.
It's anonymous. It's logging to Facebook, so Facebook still knows who you are.
Facebook knows who you are, but nobody in between. The idea would be that Imelda Marcos can't see you using Facebook. So, something like that. I don't know why. That's just the first thing that leapt to mind. Thank you, Matt Cutts, for being here. I just love it when you're on. It is so much fun. And thank you for listening to the show, too. I really appreciate that.
No. Total pleasure. Always fun to be on. Thanks for having me.
Come back anytime. You have a standing invitation, as do you, Kevin Marks. Because you are also one of my heroes, one of the few people who really understands all this stuff and can explain it. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do This Week in Google normally 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That's 21:30 UTC. I've been in a half an hour late all day, and we continue to be half an hour late. But if you can watch live, we love it. If you can't, you can always get it on demand after the fact, audio and video at twit.tv/twig or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Don't forget our newsletter. The very first edition goes out Sunday. If you want to have every edition, I know some of you are completists. You want every edition. You need to sign up by then, twit.tv/newsletter, at a domain name which will appear here someday. Thanks for joining us. Fun with lower thirds. If you're listening, this makes no sense. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.